అన్ని సగ్గండా సగండి ఎన్ని ఫైదా నేను నాన్ In the absence of further nominations, I declare May Chivas duly elected. You can come and take your seat. Thank you very much.
Good morning, everybody. How are you?
Fine.
I'm fine. We are really, really very sorry that our visitors really arrived earlier. My worry was that the comet was not around. That's my worry. You have to pardon us. I believe that Dr. Wally Sirute, you are known by everybody, that you are the father for Freedom Park. He's the founder, in other words, he's the founder of Freedom Park. For those who don't know him, he is my former chairperson. I'm seeing my father now when he's around here. That's why in Kivenda they said that when the father is there, child, you know, whatever sometimes. Why is he sitting around? So, I don't know whether you have to know who this and that, except one member here. Are the two, who have to introduce them. You have to introduce yourself to the visitors and then they'll introduce them later. Over to you.
Okay. I'm Mrs. Nyalongo, a member, and also the member in this committee. Yeah.
And you tell us where you come from.
Morning, I'm Eunice Nyalongo from Mpumalanga, and a member of this urban culture. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair.
Hey, so Chair said.
I'm Desiree van der Walt from Limpopo province.
Yeah.
Good morning, I'm Annelie Lautrec from the Free State.
My name is Peter Malanek. I'm a member of the committee.
Montuma, member of Arts and Culture. Thank you. Look, I was a former whip of the committee. Now, Montu is the whip of this committee. Umano.
And then me.
Oh, sorry, I'm sorry.
My name is Dori Murubia. I'm a member of this committee. I come from Gauteng.
So the staff members? Your neighbor? Dr. Wally, can you introduce yourself?
Hello, members. Good morning. I'm here with our Chief Financial Officer, Marina Ocamp, on my right. My name is Mongane Serote. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Freedom Park. Thank you very much, Chair.
I think we're late by 20 minutes. Knowing that, believing that because it's one item. And then Dr. Wally, this is your committee. Like I'm saying, that you're the first chairperson of Arts and Culture. I always, from long, we wanted you to be the Minister of Arts and Culture. Unfortunately, it was not your area. God knew that you would be the founder of Freedom Park, which is a unifying institution. And we're proud of you. Seeing you there, we feel that the Father is there. He will be doing whatever we're expecting from him. But my worry is that you didn't invite the committee to be part of the celebration, whatever, for the chiefs and the kings, for the old men. I don't know, that's my feeling, because I thought maybe you thought of the committee to come and witness what actually is going to happen. Is it a joke, members?
Mm-hmm.
You should have invited Daphne.
Yes.
Okay. Now is your time to present your case to the committee. The questions will come after. Over to you.
Maybe before things move so fast in our country these days, because when you said we thought or had wished that the CEO would be the Minister of Agriculture, I think PMG was writing that, and I just want him to.
That's supposed to be recorded.
No, it's not. Otherwise, we won't have a CEO tomorrow at the Freedom Park. I just don't want him to lose his job.
The call for him to be there. He was not supposed to be here. Pardon me sometimes when I say Brawali, because we call him like that. Yeah.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much, and honourable members. I will not go back into giving the background and history of Freedom Park. I thought it would be proper that I start at the point at which we are now. And we thought we should do this in three parts. I'll do the narrative and give you the highlights of where we are. We'll then field questions, if there are any questions, and after that, the CFO will then give you the background in terms of finances, financials. On the 1st of April this year, there was a transformation at Freedom Park, when we no longer were a trust, but became a cultural institution. The implications of becoming a cultural institution, as also we are driving to reach the time frame that we have set to complete the park, are making quite heavy demands on both the new council, the management, and the staff. At present, our target to finally complete Freedom Park is 2011, between April and June. However, we take cognizance of the fact that there is a major event which is going to take place in our country, 2010. We'll also prepare that we find a way to host the world, even as it will be with a not totally complete Freedom Park. The issue of completing later in comparison to the change that took place, is de- demanding in the sense that on the one hand, we have to prepare for an institution which will be independent in the sense that it has to raise funds for itself while also being funded by government, an institution which is going to need higher skills and therefore implications of retrenchments. Is it? That's the word, retrenchments. Yeah, retrenching some people. Although we are taking a very constructive approach to the matter, I'll come to that later. So on the one hand, we are locked in negotiating with staff, with the unions, with the council to find a way to ensure that we have staff that will meet the needs of an institution. As you may guess about that, a large number of staff are not qualified at the present moment to reach, to be at the to run at the helm of running an institution. And therefore, we are trying to arrange to select as much as possible from within the organization. We've had a very stringent and very organized system to upgrade people to ensure, empower them, the staff, to make sure that they are part and parcel of the culture of Freedom Park, the culture of our country. So we thought it would be prudent of us to give them top priority and find a way how to empower them to reach the skills that are needed in the organization. As you can imagine, that creates a very unstable environment where people are very anxious, people feel very insecure, people wonder about their future because all of this is affecting their bread and butter issues. But I want to say to the committee that we are approaching the matter in a very creative and most constructive way we can. I'm not saying we're not going to have retrenchments. We may have to do that in the end. But we're trying everything possible to address two very different things at the same time. To attract highly skilled people, to train the staff that we have to try and make them reach the ceiling of being highly skilled themselves. That's one part of the story. The other part, of course, is that the last element that we are working on now, which is called Qabo, a Khoisan word meaning dream, has to cover a period of 3.6 billion years of our history, culture, and heritage, starting from the singular cells that were discovered in our country and have been carbon dated to be the oldest in the country to now. It is still very difficult for me to imagine what that 3.6 billion years mean. It's still very difficult. But I think we have time-framed it in a manner that very soon all of us must have a sense of what that means. We are constructing that element using 7 epochs, which then delineate our history into portions, starting from the beginning to now. For instance, we will deal with the earth formations, how that happened. We'll then deal with how the country was peopled, how we went through issues of ancestry, approaching it both from a scientific and from a cultural point of view, the question of ancestry. The different conflicts that happened in our country and formed who we are now at present, industrialization, colonization, and so forth. It will in total be seven epochs. There was a very broad and very intense consultation. In the first instance, to try and understand if as a nation, we had a sense of our being 3.6 billion years old. And we did that from a scientific point of view, but also emphasize very seriously the question of culture, both to continuously guide us in that regard. As also we did consultations at international level, and to a large extent, institutional, tertiary institutions in our country and scientific science councils in our country to assist us to approach this matter. I could safely say at the present moment we have a storyline which will assist us to tell the story. The storyline is also interspersed with different formats. For instance, you'll find at one point we'll do through touch screens, at another through internal television, at another through storytelling, at another through sketches, at another through praise poetry. In other words, we're also borrowing very heavily on who we are to relate the story about ourselves. We have also ensured that as we do this, we are very conscious of what developments are internationally. The other matter that has been very challenging to us has been that as we construct Freedom Park, we must not forget that we're also trying to integrate into the continent and become part and parcel of the continent. So, given that we've adopted the point of reference of African Renaissance and have done also very broad consultations on the continent on this matter. To date, I think we've been to about 14 countries raising issues of the African Renaissance, raising issues of indigenous knowledge systems, raising the issue about language policy of the African Union, and tapping into African Union experiences, which we thought we should also integrate, so that when eventually we complete the Freedom Park, it becomes part and parcel of the processes and trends which are happening on the continent. Quite recently, about last week, we were in Tanzania, where we attended a conference organized by the African Diaspora Heritage Trail. Now, African diaspora throughout the world sees itself as part and parcel of the African continent. In fact, the African Union has mooted that the African diaspora becomes the sixth region of the African Union. So even that we thought we should not neglect. And therefore, we had set up an international Pan-African diaspora committee to advise us on these matters. We had a very successful meeting with them, to the point that the AU revealed that in 2011, South Africa is going to be hosting an African diaspora conference generally. And therefore, we are also negotiating now to host that organization, so that we have an input into Cabo, especially the story of enslavement, the story of settlement of the slaves in the different European and American countries, including Asia. I did not know until now that Asia actually was also involved in enslavement. Looking at all of that, the enslavement, the settlement, the contribution by the African diaspora to world culture and civilizations, and eventual wish by them to return to the continent, and the whole concept of Pan-Africanism. And I must say that in the conference now, when we're discussing the issue of Pan-Africanism, we had to take a very strong position as South Africans, so that the definition of Pan-Africanism must always be inclusive and non-racial imposition. And I'm glad to express that our argument in that way was very well received, quite questioned also in terms of understanding, and put again on the agenda for the next conference for discussions and so forth. By that I'm saying members should be aware that we are not only playing a role in South Africa, had to play a role in the Caribbean islands. We had to play a role in America. And now we're going to play a role in Asia. We're having to play a role in on the continent. And, of course, members also know that we have about 2,061 names of Cubans who fell in Angola fighting for Southern Africa. So in looking at, when we look at the Freedom Park, we should look at it in our view, I'm suggesting to members, that we should look at it as an entity which has to put on the agenda of the world the manner in which we see, understand the direction that the world must take. We cannot be outside of that. And part of this was really imposed on us in the sense that by the time when we were given the mandate to create the Freedom Park, it generated a lot of interest immediately around the world. And therefore, we had to ready ourselves to respond proactively to all the issues that were raised. And I think we're doing that quite successfully. I must say that at the present moment, my suggestion to Parliament, I'm taking the cue from what the chairperson said. It seems to me that Parliament should find a way to lead an understanding of Freedom Park so that the nation can follow its footsteps. So far, the first president of the Democratic Republic has been to the Freedom Park. Former President Thabo Mbeki has been. The current president has been and will be there tomorrow. But I think it would be much more stronger also if in its entirety Parliament arrived at Freedom Park. I think it would be a signal to the nation about the status that the Freedom Park must have, especially before 2010, especially before completion. It will say to the nation how they should look at Freedom Park. At the present moment, the different formations of our country have taken it over. We have a variety and diversity of events on the park. If you go there, you'll find children playing, sometimes dangerously, on the park, which is a very pleasing sight because they are taking it over. Another time when you come, you'll find that Mothers of Prayer, 2,000 are occupying it. Another time you'll find that elderly mothers who had been playing football visit Freedom Park. So, and another time when you come, you'll find there are traditional healers, different types of denominations, religious denominations. The people are gradually taking it over and making it their own. And as they do so, of course, they also make all kinds of demands. And the demands that they've made to us, where it is possible to be practical with them, we've integrated them into the content, what we call the content, which must determine the shape the mountain and the constructions will take. We've also had a large contingent of international people from Europe, from Asia, from the Americas, who come to Freedom Park. They don't only come. I mean, recently, when the president was in, I think he was in Transylvania or something, somewhere in the U.S., quite recently, the whole night we had to work out to-ing and fro-ing correspondence because the president of Turkey was remembering that there was a quotation that he saw at Freedom Park which he wanted to use in his speech. You find requests like that coming through. I'm saying, honorable members, that that park does no longer belong to the council or to management or to staff of Freedom Park. We have to find a manner here, and I'm pleading with a committee here. We have to find a manner so that when the hosting takes place at Freedom Park. It is a nation that does that, no longer just management and the chairperson of council. Or I don't know how you do that, but I think it is a matter that we should apply our minds to. For instance, tomorrow, from about 9 o'clock to about after lunch, there was a demand from the traditional leaders who came and said, we want to host Madiba on the mountain. Now, if you look at the list of who's coming, it's a who's who in the institution of traditional leadership, the kings and queens, Amaosi, variety of leadership in that sector of the institutions. But if you look at the agenda, the program of the day, who's welcoming? The CEO of Freedom Park has to welcome all these queens and kings, and it feels funny. It would seem to me that somebody who has a national stature should have been the one who is there to receive the people. I'm emphasizing a point here, honorable members, that perhaps sooner rather than later, if this portfolio committee can suggest a debate and discussion in Parliament, that thing which they wanted to create is maturing. It's no longer a baby or a teenager. It's maturing. And the whole world is looking at it. How should South Africa handle this institution? Freedom Park by now has won several international awards, indicating the respect with which people in the field of architecture, of plant systems, of various other things, design, the manner in which they look at it and respect it. I think the national structures of our state have been left behind in this regard. It's not enough that the president of the country visits Freedom Park. I don't think that's enough. Something else has to happen, and I'm asking that the matter be debated. We are not able to do a national debate. The matter be debated and discussed so that it can be firmly situated. Of course, all is not glossy at Freedom Park. I've given you the story about so far as staff management and council are concerned, but I'd like to raise other political issues, which, again, we can't resolve on our own, you know. For some time now, honorable members are aware that there's been a demand that the 5,000 names of South African National Defense Force, not to be mistaken for the National Force, who died in Angola, Namibia, and some here, that their names are not on the walls of names. And therefore, there's been a demand and demonstrations, protests, letters, and so on. What do we do? While we were still discussing this matter at Freedom Park, the then National Minister of Arts and Culture, Paulo Jordan, pronounced on the matter. And therefore, we had to cease discussion and debate, but after that, we thought, his saying that the names cannot be on the wall does not necessarily mean that there must not be a debate. It does not mean that there are other initiatives that we should take. So we continued with the debate, and we are still continuing with the debate. And Marine, I think it was last year or year before, 2007, I can't remember. August 9th, we went out, created a committee in Freedom Park to trace the relatives of the soldiers who had died in Angola, Namibia, and here. And I'm pleased to say that we tracked them down. It was a most moving moment at Freedom Park, because the expression which the people who came made was that for the first time, South Africa has recognized that their beloved, they had lost their beloved. So there were old ladies there. There were wives, there were sisters, there were daughters, sons, there were cousins. We also provided a book with the names of the soldiers so that the families can write something next to their names so that we have a record. That is how far we could go. You are aware, of course, that there's been a reaction to that. My counterpart, General Opperman, came to brief me and said he was going to start to create another wall of names at a Voortrekker monument, which he did. We are neighbors. When you are at Voortrekker monument, you can see for Freedom Park. When you are at Freedom Park, you can see Voortrekker monument. And of course, that is how people who visit our country also do. We have integrated into our script that when people come to Freedom Park, we must mention Voortrekker Monument and put it into historical context, which we do, cultural context, which we do. The other wall of names that now and then comes up as a sore point and a matter of controversy is when at some times the media in our country refers to the names of the Cubans, the 2061 names. Also, now and then there is a query about another section, Gallery of Leaders, where we have now plus minus 27 leaders who have chosen leaders from South Africa, continentally and internationally. And there's continuous query to the extent that some mischievous journalists have called Freedom Park an ANC Freedom Park. We don't think it's an ANC Freedom Park. We've never started it as an ANC Freedom Park. We have always had a deep and thorough understanding that this must be a park for the people of South Africa. Honourable members, let me end here. If there are any clarification or questions, we'll take that. After which, then I'll ask Marina who come to give you the background in terms of financials. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Ferrute. I don't know whether we can take some questions now, more especially related to what you were trying to highlight to us, or we still rush to. Is it that long? Over to you, Honourable Malaga.
I think we've all made notes of issues that we would like to raise regarding the CEO's input. And maybe we should get the next presentation and then.
Is that okay? Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you. Just very briefly, the annual financial statement. As you can see there, if you look at the annual report, there's a difference in the name, and that is from the 1st of April this year, we're no longer a trust, but we're a cultural institution. That's where we are now. We received an unqualified audit report. With limited audit findings, very limited significant audit findings, which we're proud to announce. And as I mentioned, the trust operated very much as a project. It was project-driven and capital-intensive, so the financial management evolved around that and managed that. And the dynamics since the 1st of April also changed in that regard. So this presentation, as we're still a trust, will focus more on the capital side of the business or of the financial. A new council was appointed on the 1st of April, which the audit committee, you will notice in the annual financial statements that the audit committee did not sign off the financials, which is the issue. although there was an oversight, that it was just because the council was what had their meetings later after submission date. I think two successes we had in terms of our funding during the year, we made a submission to National Treasury for supplementary funding of $334 million to complete the park. That was granted. We also made an application to the National Lotteries Board for funding of 30.247 million rand, which was also granted. I think those were two major successes for us during the year. That enabled us, those two enabled us to complete the park as initially envisaged. Just very briefly, our income statement. I'm not going to go through the details. As this is, as I mentioned, it is trust. We, in terms of our revenue, that's venue hiring. In the next year, you'll see more focus on admission charges, venue hiring, and income from our retail services. So just in general, our operating expenses increased significantly, about 35%. Mainly, there was an increase in our staff costs, increase in staff numbers. And currently, we're facing a dilemma because if you look at our grants, it's increasing with about 3%, while our expense base is increasing at 35%. So that's placing significant pressure on us in the future to sustain the park based on retail services and admission charges, which may pose a problem during the first or the introductory year, as we're not there yet in the current financial year. We're disclosing a surplus in the previous year and the current year, mainly as a result of the interest received. As we invest our capital funds and our interest rates were very high during this financial year, we managed to retain a surplus, which we transferred to our capital side, and those two we've agreed that funded a security solution at the park. That's just our grant, the increase from 2008-2009, that's the operating grant. To move over to the capital side, in terms of the columns there, prior to 2009, our capital grants from the Department of Arts and Culture, C490, we received 144, and in 2009-2012, and at the end, we will only receive capital grants until 2012 financial year. There's a 334 million, as I explained previously. That will give us a total of 897,328 million from the Department of Arts and Culture for the completion of the park, National Lotteries Board, and then we transferred some of our accumulated surpluses to fund capital projects. That gives us a total capital funding over the span since inception to 2012 of 958 million rand. Our lotteries money, the grant received there, we're receiving it in three tranches and based on three phases, conceptualization, developmental, and implementation phase. We're in the process, we've already received 11.25, which we've used. We're in the process to obtain the next tranche of 11 million rand. In our capital expenditure, how are we using the money that we've received? That's just an overview of how we spend how we're planning to spend 958 million rand. Our existing infrastructure is complete. It was completed during 2009. You see the total there, 365 million rand. And then, Shalpu, as Dr. Siroti mentioned, but also there's a graphical representation on the cover of the annual report of Shalpu. That's in progress. It was already a tender issued. Completed value, 376 million rand. That includes exhibition, parking, and the infrastructure, the building. Now, the 334 million in supplementary funding would go towards the administrational offices, which we're planning to issue a tender at the end of 2009, 115 million rand, and the security solution that's in progress. Our surpluses are used for that. We have Garden of Remembrance, 11 million Tiva 14.9 and other and contingencies of 28.7 million rand. And then also we need to fund our non-construction related items from our capital budget. That's computer software, hardware, furniture, the software side of the capital expenses. So that's just an indication of how we plan to spend 958 million rand, how we spend it in 2009 and prior to that. If you look at the main components of our capital expenditure, 38% on the completed item, Sharpwood approximately 40%, and our administrative office is 12%. As mentioned, we're planning to complete the park next year, including the administration offices, and that would be basically 90% of our funding that would be depleted next year, which the rest of the 10%, which we will roll out in 2011-2012. So that is the finances in a nutshell. We'll deal with questions now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is it the end of presentation for both you and Dr. Wa? Oh, thank you very much. I think that was court and ponder. I believe, Honorable Maloka has highlighted that we were sort of like jotting the concerns we want to raise for clarification. Honorable members, the time is yours now. Over to you. I'll start with Honorable Maloka, like I said here.
Mine is really on the input of the CEO. You mentioned something about attraction of highly skilled staff. So that you're trying to do that. I just want to know what it is that is being done to ensure that. And the other one is how do we, shall I use the word market? The park, especially amongst young people, in fact, I would say children, because I think it's very important that we expose young children to the park. And I'm thinking of schools. Do we have any programs with the schools? And I'd also like to know what the impact of these two walls would be. You know, does this assist us in nation building, social cohesion? The wall that is now put up at Fort Trekker Monument as well. What does this say to us? Are we not reinforcing the true South Africa perception? That we've got two South Africa in one. I think for now that would be, I may have other questions, but I don't want to delay members.
Honorable, I've forgotten your name. Lord, yes.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to know, in connection with the capital projects, have you experienced any problems in terms of project management, possible delays? Are you quite sure that by 2011 you say completion, you will have completed the project, that there isn't perhaps something that could get in the way of that? And then secondly,
Dr. Sirote, indigenous knowledge systems, you've referred to it a bit earlier on the more in the continental context, but to what extent are you involved in promoting indigenous knowledge systems in South Africa within our universities and so forth?
Chair, just one or two things. One thing is the relationship between the Voortrekker Monument and Freedom Park. I know since the committee many years ago did our first visit there, we had a feeling that there would be good relationships, so to speak, and that there would be some road link. Is that still the plan? Because I'm sure that would make easy access for people to go from the one to the other one. But and then I'm just curious to know whether, obviously, as we progress in all the different stages, there's sort of deadlines to be reached, as is 2011, the final completion date. Whether there were delays and how did that have an impact? Did there, you know, be contract penalties, etc., and how much was paid to out because or lost due to any late delays, if there were any? I must overall say, I mean, I haven't visited since last year sometime, the end of the year, and it's always nice to go to Freedom Park and see how it grows. But I think also maybe the committee should consider, because when we went there in the beginning, it was really the beginning, and that we could actually really do a proper oversight visit there, Chairperson. Thank you.
Maybe before my story comes in, I also have one question. But partly, Maluleka and Devrin have picked some of my questions. I still remember when we raised some questions that how can it be that Voortrekker and Freedom Park have a bridge to prove a sense of reconciliation that you understand each other, because we're all South Africans. Where maybe you have, maybe I don't know how to put it, have some sort of a building in between, which shows that you are extending your hand, they are extending their hand to you as a sign of reconciliation that we are one South Africa. And then the other thing is that one would like to know that do you have sometimes have some meetings, sitting together and things of common interest with the Voortrekker, rather than having they have their own meetings that side and then Freedom Park have their own meeting this side, as if we are not talking of one South Africa. Because somehow with the mentality of the young ones might think that the Boers and the undergrounds and then the Swart is on the other side. But the reason why is that I just want to entertain that the outside world should not see two separate mentality. That's how I'm thinking. I'm thinking aloud. So it's just that I suggest. And then for now, that is my question. Mama Story.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to ask a few questions, in particular to the CEO. I'm sorry, I'm a new member in this committee, Brawali. I might ask questions that seem to be irrelevant. But I've got an interest on the walls of names when you talk about the cadres who have fallen in Angola. That decision that was made that they could not have their names on the wall. I understand that you have made other efforts last night you have a book, and I didn't hear ultimately what happened, where the names ultimately put on that wall. Because I know, and I think you also know, that it was quite a concern to the movement, how really we can deal with the issue. The issue of these 11 languages, CEO, you see, it bothers me a lot all the time, even, you know, since we had our democratic government. We are not, we are lip servicing the whole thing. They are officiated, they are 11 languages, but I don't think everyone feels to use, very free to use their own languages. You can see also in some of the platforms, if you use your own language, you seem to have done a very wrong thing. There is no one to interpret to the other people. If, for instance, I speak Sivenda or Sisutu or any other language, when I'm in other forums, nobody will understand because there are other people. It becomes such a big issue. The issue of the 11 languages. Do you, as this institution, have a way maybe of dealing with this issue so that you can be assisted by Parliament? I think it's quite an issue, because I can tell you that I see it as a barrier, because there are very good people, for instance, who can express themselves in their own language. This issue of these languages, it becomes really a deficiency to them, because they cannot express them as they wanted to. You will appear to be a failure or misinterpret everything that you wanted to say. I think it's a very serious issue, the issue of languages. I'll also connect that to the, you say it's a Gabo, it's a Gabo, the dream, yes. Has the institution managed to upgrade the language of the Khoi people? About popularizing the Freedom Park, I don't know whether I haven't heard some of the parts where you spoke about the exposure to the international world or to the continent, because I really thought that you are part of the SADC component and a part of the continent, and I just wanted to know what are the relations between you and the SADC, maybe, where you think whatever happens here will be known to the other countries. I'm also concerned about the issue of the event that is coming, the 2010, if we have such a place, and we would like people who come from outside to know that we have this Freedom Park is very important to us. Whether there is still, I know the DCIS had a department like IMS, something like that, that is branding South Africa. Yes, I don't know whether we still have that, because now all the departments have been restructured that could really assist in the Freedom Park. I think that those are the questions that I would like us to be clarified on. I think I had another question, but I can't really follow it. It's just, I've just lost it in my mind. It will come back to me. Thank you.
I believe that the question is still focusing on the briefings by CEO. Comrade, Honorable Mamala.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I just want to say I'm sorry to be late. I lost my key in the morning when I went to lock the door. I'm really sorry because I delayed the meeting. I just want to ask the CEO of Freedom Park. I'm sorry, Freedom Park. I just want to ask him about the challenges in the Freedom Park. What kind of challenges that maybe you experience in the park? Secondly, I want to add to our honourable members who spoke about popularizing the Freedom Park, because as I speak, I feel very embarrassed because I'm staying in Gauteng, but I don't know that I never even visited the Freedom Park, really. Maybe when we grow up, we used to go to zoo. Every school, they visited zoo. We visited Pretoria Zoo. We visited the place like monuments, you know. Maybe if we can start at our school to popularize the place that our kids, they must visit. Always they visit the place and somebody maybe can tell them what is this Freedom Park, you know, to make sure that our kids know their history, know what is happening, because really that thing can help us. If you can start in our schools, from primary school, even to high school, that you can see the buses almost every day visiting Freedom Park. If you can make sure that you popularize the place, because really, I feel very embarrassed because I'm speaking about the Freedom Park, but I'm staying in Gauteng just next to Freedom Park, but I don't know the place. What is your challenges in Freedom Park? Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson.
I don't know whether we have to raise all the questions and then you come after. Who are these dreamers? Who are the dreamers? These dreamers you're talking about. As far as institutions are concerned regarding finance, this is raising some funds. It's either a church or whatever. There are certain things which are called pledges. Are you sort of like thinking of pledges for the big brothers? And big brothers, I mean the big people who have got money, that they have some pledges which they can do. It's either every month or each year. I'm just thinking aloud. Thank you.
The CEO spoke about staff that are not so qualified, and that you are assisting them, empowering them. I just want to check, you know, whether or not you do approach the universities around Tswane, you know, in trying to assist, with this empowerment. Because what I know is that if you would invite a university to the Freedom Park and discuss with them, and they see the place, they look at what the challenges actually are with regards to staff empowerment, they can then, or you can then with them, develop a program that will be unique to the needs of Freedom Park. So if that is not happening, I would actually put it as a recommendation to you that maybe you consider doing that. You know, I and Mamuntu just also, you know, repeated the issue of schools. And the reason why I raise this, excuse me, I think it's important to state this, is that, you know, I see Freedom Park as one other opportunity to assist us in nation building, you know, in social cohesion. So, and I think, you know, we normally complain about initiatives that are taken, which we think will help us in bringing our nation together. You know, you've got the Freedom Day celebrations, for instance, and then we complain that, you know, there are no white people coming to the celebrations and so on. And we would think of, you know, our contemporaries and people who would really not be attracted by anything to Freedom Day celebrations. I mean, I myself now am no longer attracted by anything that's taking place there. I relate to the day itself, but not the happenings on that day at the Freedom Park, at the Union Buildings or wherever this may take place. So, I think, you know, if we have, you know, your what do we call these guys at the museum? No, not tour guides. What do you call? Curators. Yeah. You know, if we at Freedom Park have, you know, not really curators, more of storytellers. The people who, and I think this is where this program that I'm talking about that can be developed with a university can assist in training such people, where you would have, you know, a good mix of young children, for instance, coming into the museum, and that would, even if it means, you know, quite frequent such visits, where such storytellers would then, you know, take these kids through, because I don't think, you know, there's a difference between your curator and a storyteller, you know, someone who can best relate things to children, you know. So, you know, people who would do that, being conscious of the fact that what they're actually doing is not just a job, but trying to bring about a new South African in those children. You know, so that's the reason why I'm raising it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now it has come back to my mind what I wanted to say. I heard Abdi Wali talking about everything that is really narrated to us. But I'm not clear what is the role of the musician. Have you captured anything on our musicians? I know there is so much from the indigenous. And I'm interested just for it, you know, I'm interested in the table that I see here, the total number of employees. Is there a special reason why I can see the female and African for that matter? There are so many of them here. It's very unusual, you know. We have been dealing with the gender equities and everything. But it seems here extraordinarily outstanding. Yes.
Right.
I thought we will have a second bite later, so I left. But I just want to touch on something that Honourable Maluleke just raised, and I think I'm on record in the House and in the committee that I said when Freedom Park started, that it's a very exciting museum, if I may say, monument for the past and for the future. In fact, it was the only thing that came that we didn't change an old name or didn't change the content one-sided. It was brand new, and it's put us on the right track to make sure that we go somewhere together as a nation, telling the stories of our past and how we were made up in this country. But also, Peter raised on something, and I know Dr. Sarothi is going out of his way to see how we get the other people to come and visit. The Afrikaners most probably, or whoever, that because there is this thing, and there are many reasons why people don't attend these things. I mean, you know, grumpy people would say because it never starts on time, it's only one language, and we've heard the issue about languages, it's never our folk song, it's always the other people's, there's always a reason why not. And how do we get beyond that to make people to have, well, not my vision, but the vision that we all created at Freedom Park, to say, this is for all South Africans. I think it's a crucial thing. And last week, when another entity was here, we actually raised the issue on a discussion of nation building and social cohesion. Because I believe that in the last 5 years, Chair, we did not focus on it. We focused on our entities and the oversight, but not the core issue that's actually inscribed in the department's vision of building on this. And we're sort of the core caretakers of that in Parliament, this portfolio. The other issue I left for the second bite is, in the annual report, there wasn't a summary of number of visits that we normally find in our museums. You know, they would say so many schools came or whatever. If we can maybe in future have that. And then I just saw on the attendance of the trustees that some of the attendants weren't that good. I mean, there's one individual who actually didn't attend a single thing, either sent a proxy or put an apology or whatever. And the same on the finance committee, that the member there didn't attend a single one. You know, is it for good reason, or are these people not members of that anymore? Because I think that's also crucial. I mean, it's quite a lot of money that Freedom Park deals with. And surely on your finance committee, one should hope. I know it's not always possible. At least you should hope that people do attend. Thank you.
Thank you very much. In the absence of bites, third and fourth bites, I think they'll raise some questions after they have responded to the questions. Over to you, Dr. Wally.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much. The first question which was raised was with regards to what do we mean by high skills at Freedom Park. The role of Freedom Park when it is an institution will still be to promote reconciliation and to contribute towards nation building, but it must do so through its core function, which means that core function must be driven by professionals who are skilled to do the thing. This thing. So, if you look at our organogram, you'll see that in large measure, where there is a great demand for high skills, will be in heritage and knowledge department, where we are requiring that we should find people who have the experience, who have had exposure, but who have also been grounded in terms of academic skilling. You will not find that a lot in South Africa, to be quite honest. So we are fishing with an understanding that as we catch the fish, somehow we have also to nurture that fish to provide. I think it will be so even if we find people from outside of Freedom Park. It is also so within Freedom Park. We have to be prepared to cultivate the skills. That is what we mean by high skilled, especially within, you were out there, Honorable Maluleka, when I was saying that if you look at our organogram, the department which needs highly skilled people to in large measure will be the what we call knowledge, heritage and knowledge department. And this is because of the role that the Freedom Park has to play, not only in South Africa, as I said in my introduction, on the continent and internationally. You need very highly skilled people, people who have had a diversity of exposure, people who have different experiences to drive the Freedom Park to contribute towards reconciliation and nation building, and to represent our country and continent in the world. But also, the other part is that, as you can see, we are beginning to address the question of how is a Freedom Park going to generate funds for itself? The finance department and the marketing department are going to have to be very skillful and creative in doing that. You also don't need a CEO, maybe very different from me, who will run the place as a business venture. So there's all kinds of different skills which are needed to make a Freedom Park what it should be for our country. You'll see that if you come to Freedom Park, you'll have a very good sense that we did a lot of international benchmarking. Where do you put us as we relate usually untold stories, unprecedented events, unique experiences? At the same time, we have to pitch it at a level at which it can stand on its own compared to any other structure. And how do you maintain that? So that's another challenge that you have. You can deal with that, how do you maintain? So the different high skills which are needed emanate from these needs, from these the objective of Freedom Park. I don't know if I've addressed that issue adequately. If I have, then I'll move to the second one, the issue of marketing of Freedom Park. The emphasis was with schools. We have not really gone out of our way to mobilize schools because initially we're still a project. But it's a matter that we're addressing very seriously now, as we have we're transforming into an institution and as we have completion on site. We will start first by experimenting in Swan and look at all the schools in Swan and say, how do we do that?
That's in Swan metro area.
Sorry?
That's in Pretoria, in the Swan metro area.
Okay. I was rehearsing it. I don't know how I forgot it. I was rehearsing it before. I was saying Funny Stroke Pretoria.
I'll keep on reminding you.
Yes, thank you. We will try that experiment to see what is it that we should do to mobilize school children. Already, on their own volition, there's busloads and busloads coming to Freedom every day. And not only from Gauteng, but from other provinces also, which means people have traveled long distances from Limpopo, from Eastern Cape. There's been buses coming. We have not put effort in that, but it's only now that we have opened an educational section, which is going to deal specifically with that issue. The other thing that we did was we initiated the formation of a youth movement, what we call African Renaissance Youth Movement, which straddles across races, which seeks to straddle across culture and provinces. At the present moment, we have a core of it in the Tshwane Pretoria area. But we have partnerships with other organizations. For instance, we're in partnership with an organization called the South African Chapter of the African Renaissance, which has structures in provinces. Because of this, we've requested them that there should be youth activity geared towards participating in the Renaissance youth movement and geared towards understanding five issues which research tells us are principles which raise consciousness in a nation. First being understanding of our history, understanding of our culture, the whole question of indigenous knowledge systems. We've taken it very, very seriously. We've commissioned a lot of papers through universities and so on to really arrive at it. But also, the whole of Freedom Park is based on indigenous knowledge systems. And that's also what makes it very, very unique. And also, that the youth must now and then debate issues of national symbols. And lastly, that the youth must address the question of heritage in our country. In order to assist that youth movement, we've also started, and maybe members, honorable members can also participate as disguised youth in this thing. We started a forum, a discussion forum. It's called online discussion forum, where people will find Freedom Park would put something on heritage and make a whole discussion on it, and there are responses. What we've noted so far is that there is a lot of visiting of that site, but there is very little participation. We are trying to address this, what is the issue and so on. To keep the fires burning around the five issues, but also to keep the Freedom Park on the agenda for the youth through this discussion forum. I must say that the question of the two walls is a real serious challenge for South Africans. It's a dilemma for us as to, and maybe I should already address what you're saying. I don't know if I understood very well what you were saying, but the issue that we were raising was the South African Defense Force name, that is the previous armed force. The 5,000 names of those people who died in Angola, in Namibia, and some here in South Africa. What do we do with those names? I must put it that it's a very sore thumb. On the one hand, one understands a loss within a family, what that means. I saw it with my own eyes. I touched the pain when the mothers, the sisters, the brothers, the children came to Freedom Park. You could feel it. And of course, it raises another very serious question. How can you have citizens in a country whose past is not closed? It's a living pain in the family. I'll relate one story when I was sitting at a table, because we arranged such that Freedom Park people are mixed with everybody. And this lady related a story about her husband. And you could feel as she was relating it that the story is very fresh in her mind, even though it was 25 years later. She said that her husband was a commander guarding some Khoisan chief in Namibia who had agreed to deploying some of the people in his village within SADF. And therefore was a target for SWAPO. And SWAPO planted landmines to trap him. And he was hit by the landmines. And he was really very quickly transported to Military One Hospital. He was still alive, fortunately. And he was on the road to recovery. though the question, the key question that was still being addressed was bleeding. He was bleeding profusely. And they done something that I don't know what medical doctors do to prevent this. But on this particular day, he then took sleeping tablets. Because also because of pain, he could not sleep. And in his deep sleep, he dislocated the pipes. And nobody was observing, so he bled to death. Now, this lady had been visiting, and there was great hope in the family that this man is coming back, the father is coming back, and lights out. Now, from a human point of view, you can't be neutral and ignore a statement like that, or be colors to the feelings of the family. At the same time, at the political level, today we are receiving flak from, I think largely, I hope I'm not wrong, largely Africana sector of our nation. But if you were to put those 5,000 names on the wall, you'd receive major flak also from the black side. So we're really caught up between this issue. And of course, the other question that is being raised, which as South Africans we should look straight in the eye, which was asked by the Minister of Arts and Culture, former. He asked, where in the world have you seen the names of, how do you say, the opposing parties? These words that are used about that. Where in the world do you find that? There's been two major world wars. You can't find that anywhere. There's been wars in Vietnam and so on. You don't find that anywhere. Why should we set a precedent? On what basis? But of course, also he's saying that because already when you say that, you take sides in terms of the struggle. Well, what happened? I can only say to honorable members that this is a dilemma. My view on the matter is the best that we can do for now is we must keep the matter on the agenda and discuss it as a nation. We must not shrink from it. When the CEO of Fort Dragon Monument came to brief me about the step to build a wall of names, I told him I can't be opposed to that. I don't know what to do with it. It's a matter that is completely difficult to address. And because they are a private company and so forth, they will raise the money, they will do it, and maybe that becomes part of our history, that it is so. But I then asked him a question after he had said so. Soldiers, the duty of soldiers is to do all kinds of things, including killing people. And those soldiers must have killed people in townships, in the rural areas, and so on. So I asked him, are you going to put the names of those people that they killed? And he said, no. So both sides are at catch-22. And that is precisely why I think we should keep the matter on the agenda and discuss and eventually find. There's been suggestion, I've had long discussions with General Constant Fellioun and other generals on the matter. And of course, from that side, you'll feel very passionate motivations and strong views on the matter, but equally so on the other side. I've said with former cadres like myself, from Mukonto, Siso, we've discussed this matter, and you find the same strong passion like that. What must we do? I think it remains a question to our consciousness, which we must address as nationals.
I didn't hear. I was actually, we were discussing this issue about the war. And when I said I didn't hear from, it was a first hand, from someone whose brother died in, I think it's in Namibia. who was in the FADF, who said that her parents are actually completely opposed to the idea that the name of a brother must be next to the name of a terrorist.
You find that too. I've heard that over and over. I've heard also people say, well, it does not matter, this is an ANC thing, we're not going to be part of the ANC. Equally, I've heard the opposing view to that. And I'm saying both those views are very strong in our nation. It's an indication of something also. And that's why I think the only way, thing that we can keep doing, should be discussed. Hopefully we'll arrive at a point where people can discuss this thing very objectively, hopefully, at a certain point, and we can be assisted to reach a consensus of some sort on the point. Next issue which I was asked to respond to is the issue of indigenous knowledge systems. I must say that we are in partnership with about 6 universities. University of the North, University of Limpopo, University of Zululand, Durban, University of Technology, University of KwaZulu-Natal, and another. And all of these is to really brainstorm through and come with innovative ideas around the issue of indigenous knowledge systems. I think in our country, Freedom Park is one of the very important examples of what indigenous knowledge systems can do if you approach it with the understanding that you want to promote and innovate this knowledge. We've done so, I think, very successfully. We've introduced all kinds of different design schemes in architecture, and many times when you talk to the constructors at Freedom Park, they'll tell you that they've been highly challenged to construct the way it has, which is very important and good. And I think that is why Freedom Park has had, I think, 3 or 4 awards internationally when we participate, quite very important and high profile awards, which is very encouraging, and hopefully will inspire our people to further explore these indigenous knowledge systems. Maybe just to put it on the agenda of the committee, we have arrived at saying that indigenous knowledge systems has 5 categories: social issues, technology, biodiversity, liberatory processes, and institutions. And according to that, we've explored different issues on those and showed them up as material for construction. There was an issue raised about the road connecting Voortrekker Monument and Freedom Park. First, let me say, Freedom Park initiated that we should have a memorandum of agreement between Voortrekker Monument and Freedom Park, and we successfully drew it up, signed it. And one of the issues in that memorandum of agreement was, of course, the issue of the roads. But if you follow from what the CFO has been saying, we have to be very thrifty, because the top priority is we must complete the project. So because of that, we sort of had to say to Voortrekker Monument, we are not ready at the present moment to deal with the road. But it's something that we should put on our agenda, precisely for the reasons which have been given here. The only agreement that we have presently, which I think both sides practice, is if people visit Voortrekker Monument, they are told about Freedom Park, and if people visit Freedom Park, they are told about Voortrekker Monument. That's how far I think we've carried the the memorandum of agreement. The rest was marred by the SADF names and became very awkward discussion. So I'm hoping I've also addressed the question that the chairperson has raised about the bridge or building between Fort Becker Monument and Freedom Park. The question of languages. We have a language policy at Freedom Park. If you come there, you'll have no choice. You'll speak all the 11 languages as we introduce you to, as the tour guides take you through. We give nobody choice but to be exposed to the different languages. But even as it is so, it is still, I agree with you, I think it's still a serious challenge. And because of this, we exchanged with the Language Academy of the African Union. And I must say that their approach to the question of language is most inspiring and most encouraging, in the sense that they've divided languages into about four categories. And when you approach it like that, you suddenly see that we've been told that there are 2,000 languages on the African continent. In essence, there are four. How is that? So if you, there's what they call border languages, and they're being promoted as border languages and cultivated and nurtured to the 21st century. There's what they call business languages, which also they are. And then there are languages which they call neighborly languages, where...
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Hey, you'll find the chairperson. I speak to the chairperson in the institute, which speaks to the inventor, and we hear each other. And then the matter continues. And then, of course, the fourth being, what do institutions of learning do to intervene and assist access to language, the different languages? That is the approach, and I found the approach very fresh and new, very encouraging. And I think the Pan-South African Language Board of South Africa must be encouraged to exchange with that academy. The academy is based in Mali, and the people who are in it take their mandate very, very seriously. We invited them to South Africa. We invited Pan-South African Language Board and other institutions which deal with language, so that we can already enter that space of discussion in terms of language. I don't know how far the Pan-South African Language Board went with that issue. Just to share that, in order that we maintain our core function, but be able also to diversify and participate in different things, we've tried to identify like-minded organizations and formed partnerships in South Africa, on the continent, and internationally. For instance, tomorrow there is an organization called Think Equity coming from the United States who we'll be exchanging with for about 10 days. They have been responsible to creating all kinds of memorials, monuments, museums in the whole of the United States. They were participated in creation of the Indian Museum, and now they're participating on Ground Zero, recreation of Ground Zero, and so forth. We've had a very long relationship with them. Problem only is that now and then it becomes very costly. But we've had a very long relationship with them because also they are not only in the U.S., they are also Asia and Latin America. So we are exposed to what is happening in those countries because of our relationship with them. Here at home, another member was raising the question about Southern Africa. There is an organization called African Renaissance Organization of Southern Africa with whom, in which we are in partnership. And because of that, we have places. Now and then, when we were conducting cleansing and healing, Mozambique, Lesotho, Swaziland, Botswana, and those areas, we used those bases, you know, the chapters in those countries, to assist us to be sensitive to national issues, be sensitive to how we approach things. And it has been very, very helpful. And as a result, wherever we have conducted cleansing and healing and return of spirits, I think South Africans are very respected because of the way we carried ourselves, because of the way we entered into partnership with those people. And but of course, as you do that also, you are in some way also marketing Freedom Park to those people, because there are all kinds of questions that arise when you do so. And usually when you go and conduct cleansing and healing, you do it not less than 10 days being there, based there, and interacting with the population, the government, NGOs, and so forth. And I must say that starting right down from Tanzania, because we've been to Tanzania, Zimbabwe, no, Zambia, and the other countries, Mozambique, Lesotho, and so forth, I think we've done very well, including, by the way, the United States, where when we announced through their media wires that we're going to do cleansing and healing there, there was a major response to that by the first peoples of that country, by Afro-Americans, and by other spiritual people who participated fully in the thing that we're doing. Unfortunately, we've on both the question of Sator and the organization, I forget what it is called, which promotes proudly South Africa. Proudly South African, I forget. We really paid lip service. We've never really we've discussed with them, but never finalized agreements. And I think this is a time when we should do so. We should really take it very seriously and go and do that. Challenges at Freedom Park, one, Mama, is the question that we raised earlier on. What do we do with all of names? I think that the issue of language is still one other major challenge. We should do more than what we have done now. One of the major challenges is what I started by saying. Are we sure, as was stated here, that in large measure, majority of South Africans feel ownership of Freedom Park? I don't know. From our side, I can say, it pushed very hard that it should be so, but I think an outside body should measure that for us, whether we have succeeded or not. We can't say. I think it's a very serious challenge, especially because a lot of taxpayers' money was spent to build this park. It must be owned by the nation. It can't be just the responsibility of the CEO and managers and the council. We have not gone out to promote the Khoisan languages, no. However, we are addressing the question of the Khoisan very, very seriously. We've had several workshops with them and facilitated for them contact with the National House. When we were interacting with them, there was a gripe, a very big gripe about the fact that they've been left out of the house. And now they've been integrated. We facilitated that by engaging, because we have a partnership also with the National House of Traditional Leaders. So we approached that institution at the highest level and facilitated for meetings between the two. And I know, because quite recently we had to, you know, there's been three migrations to South Africa outside of Europe. There was the first migration when the people, about 5,000 or 6,000 years, moving from the north to South Africa. And they integrated, changed nothing, became part and parcel of the landscape, animal kingdom, plant kingdom. They added the human kingdom to it. The second migration happened, and it were people who were already thinking about homesteads, agricultural industry, and so forth. And there was a conflict between the two. And those who came as a second migration took out spears and killed the others. This is now wars, pre-colonialism. A third migration also happened from South Nigeria, Gabon, Central Africa, and part of East Africa into South Africa. Another war. And this was the seed which was planted for tribalism. It's only been put now on our agenda of Freedom Park. And we had to mobilize. When we went to the House, National House, and we asked, are you aware of this, these levels of migration? They were not aware. But members in the House stood up and talked about it. We found that, again, in the same way that I was talking about the SANDF, there is a very sore point there. You know, pre-colonial, there is a very, very sore point. Because there were major killings, including Fekan, major killings, bloodletting, which in essence has not been addressed. But we tried at Freedom Park. We had two major meetings around the issue. And I should expect that, in a way, we should find a way, and this is why there should be ownership of Freedom Park. Because we do those things, and they end up being just management, council, the people who came. How does that permeate? How must we encourage permeation so that the nation knows about it and from whatever angle the nation can participate? So also that is a very major challenge. There was some time about 2 years ago when we started engaging private sector to try and talk to the issue of pledges. And we went up to a certain point. But we are a project, you know, and when we looked at it, it became a very major thing that we have to do. We couldn't do it in half measures. So we thought we should postpone it. We formed a committee for fundraising, which is within marketing and communication. And now that committee is being activated to address the question of pledges. How do we do? How do we engage private sector, incentivize that they participate? Question of musicians. Quite recently, we mobilized the top musicians, and we had a 4-hour event with most of the top musicians of our country. And it's because we understand that if they play, we give them a role in Freedom Park. There's no other very effective way of advertising Freedom Park other than that. My impression at the present moment is that most musicians were very moved by Freedom Park. They enjoyed being there, and they supported many of the programs that we exposed them to the extent that I've heard quite recently that many of them, when I think the Department of Arts and Culture has absorbed them to do something for 2010. And they are the ones now who are pushing that Freedom Park must have a definite role during 2010, asking that Bafana Bafana must come there for a washing, for a cleaning, clean up. And so on, which is very encouraging. May I conclude, Chairperson and Honorable? Yes, the CFO was just reminding me that there are two other issues that you will try to take. She'll take one of them. I'll take this one about we need advice, very serious advice. From our side, I don't know, I think we tried the best we can to encourage that white South Africans must have a positive attitude towards Freedom Park and visit. We have not succeeded. There's something that we are not doing correctly. We've had various consultations. We've done what we thought were processes to encourage that, but we are not succeeding. The white people who come to Freedom Park, if you meet them, they are foreigners. and they come in large numbers. But it's a sore point for us, because that's not our the key thing. We should be gratified by the fact that foreigners do come to Freedom Park, but more important for us is still this question. We're unable to answer it. And if the committee can find a way to debate it, discuss it, summon us to come and listen or advise us, I don't know what we should do. But it's a very difficult problem. I'm not saying there are no white South Africans who are coming. There are. But compared to the population, it's not correct. Maybe I should hand over to CFO to answer the second part.
Maybe before she comes, are you responding to the question of the dreamers?
Oh, yes. You know, there is a saying in Khoisan. It says, a dream is not a dream until it is a community dream. And within that, you'll hear the word Qabo as they talk about that. And Qabo means dream. Therefore, the last building of at Freedom Park is called Qabo. Because this is where we're going to dream about as a nation. We're going to dream about our lifespan of 3.6 billion years. Which means the whole nation must dream in there. We hope we can represent the manner in which the nation dreams and tells its story about the earth, about the ancestors, about the peopling, and so on and so on. That's where the dream is. So we are the dreamers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, ma'am.
There was a question on the capital projects, if there are any delays currently. If you look at Schwab's, apologies for my pronunciation, that's on track, no delays. Tender is payments. If you just look at the payments that we make, we actually ahead the progress, and they're planning to hand over in January next year. That will then kick off the installation of the exhibition. Exhibitions are currently, because we're relying on the National Lotteries Board for the funding, there's quite an extensive process that they follow in releasing the funds. So we're waiting for those tranches that they're taking, that's delaying the exhibition development process, them transferring the money, the physically, the cash. After we followed our, from our side, we followed the process. Secondly, if we look at our interactive center here, next to that next year, we want to issue the tender by the end of this year. But adjacent to that, there's going to be a link to the administrational offices. Now, the dynamics in terms of the property changed because it was initially owned by Transnet. Transnet recently transferred the property to the Department of Public Works. And that's ultimately, we're basically building all the construction, the site is basically built belonging to the Department of Public Works, which we've engaged in a memorandum of agreement. Now, what's delaying the construction in terms of the memorandum? They pledged 50 million rand and to take the process forward in terms of the project management and other processes of the administrational building. They've been very slow, so we've taken a decision to go ahead, because if we don't complete the administration building up to a point where we can open Schwabel, because it's adjacent, it's still a construction site, which is posing problems in terms of visitors and the safety of visitors. It's a very sensitive relationship that we're trying to maintain at this stage, and in terms of the maintenance as well. So there are issues there that's delaying the administrational block, but we don't foresee more than a month delay in that process, which we'll sort out with them. There are no other delays. We've got our cash flow projections. We know we need to roll out tenders or either in the process of being awarded or specifications are being drawn up. that's the capital projects. There was a question about the staff that's not so qualified and should we approach universities. We have a memorandum of agreement with UNISA, and where those issues were identified and the partnership created to basically nourish that part of the or the students, the curriculum, etc. We also we're in the process of appointing a curriculum developer as well. That's to answer that. And we've noted the summary of visitors. We will include that. Currently, it's about 2,800 visitors per month that we get. 2,800 to 3,000. The attendance of trustees. We, as mentioned during the presentation, we changed council. Only one member remained, the chairperson of the previous board of trustees. She's a member. Otherwise, we've got a brand new council. So those members are very committed. We've seen a very serious commitment and passion from the council to take the organization forward. So we don't foresee those problems. There were reasons, yes, for those members not attending, but we don't foresee the same problems into the future. I'm not sure if...
To close the question of training of staff, all agreements that we have with the various universities have a clause which says the work that people are doing at Freedom Park or other organizations that we are in partnership with must also be recognized to be accredited and evaluated whether they can contribute to degrees or whatever. And there's a firm agreement with most of the universities that we are in partnership with.
There was one more question in terms of the female employment equity. Just on, it is a comment. Just on the next page, on page 18, there's more details in terms of that.
Can you please switch off your mic, Dr. Zoya? I think in the absence of follow-ups, we are so grateful. Are you coming? I thought you raised your hand. Oh. In the absence of follow-up questions, I think the briefing was an empowerment to us as a committee and empowerment at the same time, seeing that we enjoyed, not enjoyed in the sense of enjoying, but empowered as an eye-opener, and showed what is happening at Freedom Park, which I believe, like I raised that last question, who are the dreamers? We are part. We are the dreamers, which I believe that when a person dreams and explains his dream, the park will receive or respond to our dreams, and vice versa. When they raise their issues, I think we'll be attending to them, not promising that we have a lot, but by then we'll be dreaming, and then we'll be showing that we are working hand in hand and helping each other to build this country of ours, which I believe that we are for that. As Arts and Culture Committee, we are not promising gold mines or whatever. We are promising that we'll be working with you, and when we are called, I hope that you won't resist and say, no, I can't go there because they're talking a lot of whatever they think is good or not good. We'll be working as brothers and sisters, wanting to know which direction are we taking, really, because this Freedom Park, it's our baby. I think it's our baby. We have to make sure that it lives.
like was really sort of like suggesting certain things which we believe will be happening. This brings us to the end of our participation. We'll be interacting with you, Comrade Wally. We are your children. We are our father. We are trying to follow your steps. Thank you very much. To say something as a father. Over to
you. Just a brief thing, Chairperson. I was going to extend an invitation, but qualify it. But please climb the aeroplane and arrive, and we'll host you. I would like to really spend some time with you, go through tour guiding, and then sit and discuss after that. You can actually bring picnic baskets so that you can come and camp with us there. Thank you, Chair.
Is there anybody who wants to respond to that one?
Because I think it's a formal invitation, we must accept it, and that we will visit Freedom Park most probably early in the new year.
The committee's sort of acting, it's only your request really, that we make sure that nothing will stop us from going to Freedom Park. Brings to the end of our meeting. The meeting is adjourned. Unfortunately, I'm sorry. I wanted the secretary to announce a special announcement.
There's no announcement.
This is what?